Good evening, and thank you for joining the E*TRADE Financial Second Quarter 2013 Earnings Conference Call. Joining the call today are Chief Executive Officer Paul Izick and Chief Financial Officer Matthew Audette, as well as other members of E*TRADE's management team. Today's call may include forward-looking statements which reflect management's current estimates or beliefs and are subject to risks and uncertainties that may cause actual results to differ materially. During the call, the company may also discuss non-GAAP financial measures. For a reconciliation of such non-GAAP measures to the comparable GAAP figures, and for a discussion of additional risks and uncertainties that may affect the future results of E*TRADE Financial, please refer to our earnings release furnished with Form 8K and our 10Ks, 10Qs, and other documents the company has filed with the SEC. All of these documents are available at about.etrade.com. This call will present information as of July 24, 2013. The company disclaims any duty to update forward-looking statements made during the call. This call is being recorded, and a replay will be available via phone and webcast later this evening at about.etrade.com. No other recordings or copies of this call are authorized or may be relied upon. With that, I will now turn the call over to Paul Izick.
Thank you very much. Good evening. It's a pleasure to be speaking with you again. There's plenty on which to update you since we last spoke, so I'll get right into it. I joined E*TRADE a little over 6 months ago, and I face each day with more enthusiasm for this company and the opportunities that lie ahead of us. As you are aware, the last few years have been quite challenging, not only for our industry, but particularly for this company. My colleagues here put in a lot of hard work through these times, toughed it out, and we are now ready to drive the franchise forward. We now sit in a position where, through proper focus and execution, we can crisply turn the corner and deliver for our customers and our owners in a meaningful way. I have the senior team focused on a number of key areas to help our company and help our company seize the opportunities that lie ahead of us. First, the ruthless execution of our capital plan, about which we have been speaking for quite some time. Successful execution of this plan is the most visible, meaningful, and measurable way to deliver near-term value to our shareholders. And we've made significant progress in a number of key elements within the plan, including de-risking and deleveraging the balance sheet, building out our enterprise risk management capabilities, particularly internal audit, bank compliance, and operational risk management, reducing our costs, have completed damn near all of our identified cost saves, and finally, bolstering our capital position, reaching our target for the bank's Tier 1 leverage ratio during Q2. We remain intensely focused on execution of this plan and are increasingly confident in our ability to achieve our capital goals going forward. Our second area of focus, and something of particular interest to mine, is to ensure that this business receives the level of attention and leadership it deserves. In that regard, I've completed the build-out of my executive committee, adding some serious firepower this quarter. First, with the appointment of Nitesh Nandra as the company's president. Mr. Nandra has taken the reins on reshaping some of our internal structures to better align our colleagues with their talents and our business goals. Further, he is ensuring that our day-to-day business activities advance the ball in improving our customer experience and reshaping the P&L. With the good fortune of a great depth of talent here at E*TRADE and Nitesh's incisive way of thinking, I believe we are well positioned to succeed. We also recently brought on a new chief marketing officer in Liza Landsman, who joined us following impactful tenures at Citigroup and BlackRock. She has wasted no time since her arrival completing a thorough review of marketing agencies and selecting a partner to help us define our path towards the next phase of this company's evolution. Liza is in the final stages of bringing on Ogilvy and Mather to help us drive a marketing and advertising platform that more fulsomely engages with our existing customers, while emphasizing our brand as a trusted destination for assets and advice to the broader market. And our third area of focus, driving productivity. Driving productivity and value through constant process improvement and an unwavering focus to deliver for our customers and our owners. While this is fairly comprehensive and embedded within the other areas of attention I described, My goal is to more effectively drive the theme of executional excellence and process perfection across the depth and breadth of this organization. No matter how good processes are, they can always be improved. So this will never cease to be an area of our concentration. Somewhat in the same vein, I am proud to announce that the team has completed essentially 100% of our targeted cost reductions as outlined in our capital plan. Cutting unnecessary spend and reshaping our cost structure sets us up for significant operating leverage, particularly if we continue to move into a more helpful macroeconomic environment marked by improving investor sentiment, more beneficial interest rates, and continuing improvement in credit. If these trends continue in the right directions, I hope to be in a position where we're discussing the areas in which we are investing, as opposed to providing updates on cost reduction. Moving on to our results in the business. For the second quarter, we posted a net loss of $54 million, or 19 cents per share, which included a one-time charge of $142 million related to the impairment of goodwill resulting from our decision to exit our market-making business. We acquired the market maker in 2001. As my team has looked at where we want to allocate our resources, both financial and management energy, we decided our owners would best be served by exiting this business unit. Matthew is orchestrating the sale of this business, and we'll cover more on this topic later in this call. Excluding the impact of our decision to exit the market maker on the quarter's results, we had a respectable Q2, recording net income of $60 million, or 21 cents per share, on revenues of $440 million. Our results reflected ongoing customer engagement, with quarterly DARTs of 150,000, up slightly from the first quarter, and up 8% from the second quarter of 2012. We were pleased to see customer activity remain in line with the first quarter, but are mindful that the third quarter is typically slower due to seasonality. So we're not surprised that our July-to-date trading levels are tracking down 4% from June, but pleased they're up from July of last year by 8%. Derivatives continue to be an important component of how our customers manage their financial well-being. Second quarter trading activity included 24% of our customer volume and options, a fairly consistent mix for the past year. Mobile transactions continued to trend upwards amongst our customers, as approximately 8% of DARTs came from mobile devices during the quarter, a nice improvement over last quarter and more than double their levels from 2 years ago. Net new brokerage assets for the quarter were $1.7 billion, bringing the year-to-date total to $4.8 billion, representing an annualized growth rate of 5.6%, behind our 8.5% annualized growth in the first half of 2012. Our comparatively slower asset growth is attributable to seasonal outflows around tax season. In April of this year, our net new brokerage assets were essentially zero, weighing on our full quarter growth metrics. We brought in 30,000 net new brokerage accounts, which is off the pace of 46,000 in the same quarter last year. However, our teams did an exceptional job in retaining existing accounts as we posted 8.4% annualized brokerage account attrition in Q2, matching our record lows set in the same period of last year and delivering our renewed commitment to improving the quality of our customer experience. An important area of opportunity continues to be created by expanding customer awareness around our retirement, investing, and savings offerings, in particular our managed accounts. Within these product groups, we ended the quarter with $1.8 billion in assets under management, a significant achievement given we launched these products just 3 years ago. We obviously look forward to driving even more meaningful growth in these products to make them a more impactful and visible contributor to our customers' financial well-being and to our shareholders' returns. In summary of the quarter, I'm pleased with our results. The team executed well on a number of our initiatives, including sharpening our customer focus, cost reductions, and our capital plan. You have heard me talk more about what we, as a team at E-Trade, are doing about improving what we deliver in support of our customers. You should expect this to increasingly feature in our expositions about the business. As we have gained tempo regarding the capital plan and have successfully delivered against virtually all of our targeted cost reduction efforts, the team can now sharpen its focus on things that is well armed to do and to do well. Improve the customer experience, deliver exceptional value, increase productivity, drive returns for our shareholders, and get back to having some fun. We still have our work cut out for us for the remainder of the year and beyond, but I'm confident in it in our capabilities and motivation to seize the opportunities that we see ahead of us. One final note before I turn the microphone over to Matthew. I wanted to take a moment to properly announce and welcome our newest member of E-Trade's Board of Directors, Mr. Mohsen Fahmy. Mohsen brings a superb record of financial services experience, particularly in the area of risk management. We are fortunate to have him on the team and look forward to his contributions and insight. We are still in the process of searching for other talented individuals to join our board, and we will obviously update when there's more to share in that regard. With that, I will turn the call over to our ever-prudent CFO, Matthew Audette.
Thank you, Mr. Idzik. For the second quarter, we reported a net loss of $54 million, or 19 cents loss per share, which includes impairment of goodwill of $142 million associated with our intent to exit our market-making business. Excluding this charge, we reported solid net income of $60 million, or 21 cents per share, up from net income of $35 million, or 12 cents per share in the first quarter, and up from net income of $40 million, or 14 cents per share in the year-ago period. Our second quarter net revenues were $440 million, up from $420 million in the prior quarter. Revenues included net interest income of $243 million, up slightly quarter over quarter, as a result of 5 basis points of net interest spread improvement to 235 basis points, partially offset by a $730 million reduction in the average balance sheet size. The increase in spread this quarter was primarily driven by an improvement in the interest rate environment as we saw rates rise across the curve. Given this rise in rates, we now anticipate our net interest spread for the full year 2013 to be slightly above 230 basis points. Additionally, if rates move in line with what the forward curve assumes, we anticipate further spread improvement in 2014 with an average spread of approximately 240 basis points. Commissions, fees and service charges, principal transactions, and other revenue in the second quarter were $177 million, up 8% from the prior quarter, and up 15% from the same quarter of 2012. Average commission per trade was $11.10, down from $11.30 last quarter, due to a lower mix of stock plan trades in Q2. Principal transactions revenue was down slightly quarter over quarter, despite a slight increase in volatility, as spreads tightened and a smaller portion of our customer trades were handled internally. Revenue this quarter also included $20 million of net gains on loans and securities, net of impairment, up from $15 million in the prior quarter. The significant volatility in rates and mortgage spreads that occurred late in the quarter resulted in the repositioning of portfolio assets, driving gains above our forecasted range. Despite the sequential increase, we continue to expect these gains to be in the $10 to $15 million range per quarter, barring potential deleveraging needs or volatility in the rate environment. Our legacy loan portfolio ended the quarter at $9.6 billion. A contraction of approximately $500 million during the quarter, and is now down more than 70% from its peak. We expect loan runoff to average approximately $400 million per quarter for the rest of 2013, generally consistent with the 4 to 5% quarterly decline we have experienced for some time. This quarter's provision for loan losses was $46 million, compared with $43 million in the prior quarter, which was positively impacted by a $13 million settlement. So adjusted for last quarter's settlement, this quarter's provision marked a sequential improvement of approximately $10 million. For the remainder of this year, barring any unforeseen external disruptions, we expect quarterly provision expense to be in the range of $40 to $60 million. However, I must emphasize the nature of the quarterly provision is inherently uncertain. So this range, while our best estimate today, could vary meaningfully. Total net charge-offs in the quarter were $50 million, down considerably from last quarter's $81 million, excluding the $13 million settlement. Total special mention delinquencies in the quarter were down 14% sequentially, and delinquencies for the entire loan portfolio were at their lowest level since mid-2007. The total allowance for loan losses ended the quarter at $451 million, down $4 million from last quarter. With delinquencies at their lowest levels in the past 6 years, our coverage for potential losses on non-modified loans increased significantly. And this quarter's allowance represents coverage of 95% of loans at least 90 days past due. This compares to 80% last quarter. For modified loans, our total expected losses remain at 35%, unchanged from Q1. Improvements in the housing market so far this year have had positive impacts on our loan portfolio. The overall risk profile has improved, with the average LTV of our 1-4 family portfolio ending the quarter at 98%, down nearly 7 percentage points, and below 100% for the first time since 2010. The average LTVs of our home equity book also saw market improvement, ending the quarter just under 105%, the lowest since 2009. During the quarter, we modified $35 million of loans, slightly up from $34 million in the prior quarter. We continue to expect modifications to remain at low levels over the near term. However, modifications may increase in future periods as our HELOCs convert from interest-only to amortizing in the years to come. As we've indicated in past presentations, these conversions will not take place in a material way until 2015 and beyond. Of our $3 billion HELOC portfolio, 26% are scheduled to convert in 2015, with an additional 41% in 2016. Moving on, as we mentioned earlier, we have decided to exit our market-making unit, G1X, a conclusion reached in light of the tightening economics for that business, coupled with the potential associated risks, both operational and regulatory, and most importantly, because it is not core to our retail customer business. The sale process is currently underway, and we aim to announce a transaction in the next 3 to 6 months. We will update you once there's more to share. For the moment, I will only highlight that we do not expect a material impact on our future financials once we sell this business, as the majority of its value to the firm lies in our ongoing customer order flow. Said differently, once the sale is complete, all revenue in the principal transactions line will be gone, and the fees and services charge line will reflect payment for order flow as all volume is sent externally. One other impact of our decision to exit the market-making business relates to the reclassification of its assets and liabilities to held for sale, which are now captured within other assets and other liabilities. This included the reclassification of approximately $90 million in trading securities and approximately $20 million of intangible assets. Excluding the impairment of goodwill and restructuring, operating expenses for the quarter were $262 million, down sequentially predominantly on lower advertising, compensation, and FDIC premiums. While the sequential decline in advertising and compensation expenses reflected seasonality, the reduction in FDIC insurance premiums relates to the continued improvement in the quality of our balance sheet. We expect this line will continue to improve over time, commensurate with the improvement to our overall risk profile. On expenses broadly, I am proud to say that we have substantially completed all of the targeted cost savings captured in our $110 million expense reduction plan. As a reminder, when we began the program last year, we set out to drive efficiency across the company by reducing recurring, controllable expenses in areas that were not directly driving value for our owners. We took a hard look at every dollar spent across the organization and made determinations based on overall return and ultimate benefit to our customers. Through this review, we identified and implemented savings across a number of fronts, most notably through our people costs. Since we began the program, our total headcount, including outsourced support, is down from a peak of around nearly 4,000 to approximately 3,300 today. With that, we feel good about our cost reductions being complete and are focused on ensuring we have the right level of investments going forward. Additionally, as we have dug further into the details of building out our enterprise risk management capabilities, we have determined that we need to make additional investments. As such, our initial investment estimate for our investment of ERM of $10 million is now closer to $15 million. This is a crucially important area for us, and given the importance we place on doing this right, we feel good about this additional investment. Accordingly, our estimated net cost reductions are approximately $95 million, and the clean quarterly expense run rate should wind up in the mid-260s. Turning to corporate cash, we ended the quarter at $251 million, above 2 years' worth of debt service coverage. The sequential decline of $101 million related to corporate interest payments, as well as other tax payments and intercompany settlements. As a reminder, there can be noise in the individual quarters related to tax and intercompany allocations, which do not necessarily impact corporate cash in a meaningful way over the long term. Our capital ratios improved across all measures during the quarter for bank and consolidated calculations. At the bank, our Tier 1 leverage ratio ended the quarter at 9.5%, up 20 basis points from last quarter, and at the targeted level outlined in our capital plan. For all other bank risk-based ratios, we were between 21 and 23%, well in excess of regulatory thresholds. At the parent, our ratios increased across the board as well. We ended the quarter with a Tier 1 leverage ratio of 6.4%, up 40 basis points from the prior quarter. Our risk-based measures at the parent are between 12 and 16%, again, well in excess of regulatory requirements. In addition, the Fed recently announced the final rules for its implementation of Basel III capital requirements. The phase-in of the adopted rules is scheduled to begin in 2015, and banks will be required to comply with the fully phased-in requirements by 2019. I would like to highlight the changes that impact us the most, noting that we view the overall impact of the new rules as very favorable. First, the risk weightings for our mortgage loans will remain unchanged from their treatment under current Fed rules. This is a favorable change from what was previously outlined in the NPR. Second, the risk weightings for our margin loans, which we currently weight at 100%, will decline as they are considered fully collateralized and generally qualify for 0% risk weighting under the new rules. Third, the final rules give us the option as to whether we include in our regulatory capital unrealized gains or losses on securities carried in AOCI. Given our balance sheet structure of deposits funding securities and the potential volatility related to changes in the securities markets, we certainly intend to elect for the exclusion of AOCI from our capital. Fourth, and consistent with the initial NPR, trust preferred securities will be excluded from capital with a phase out beginning in 2015. So in summary, with respect to our Tier 1 common calculations, assuming the full implementation of the revised capital rules, our current levels of 21.6% and 12.2% for the bank and parent, respectively, would improve to 30.8% and 18% based on the new rules. The full phase-out of TRUPS on our consolidated Tier 1 leverage ratio will reduce our current level of 6.4% to 5.3% on a pro forma basis. Overall, we feel very good about our capital position. Moving to progress on our capital plan, we continue to execute well on the plan and feel confident in our ability to achieve our capital goals. Our de-risking continues to progress, the build-out of ERM is on track, and our capital ratios are improving, driven by earnings and our deleveraging actions. In that vein, during the second quarter, we completed an additional $800 million in deleveraging actions to bring our completed total to $8.7 billion. This falls within our original plan of $5 to $10 billion in deleveraging, and just above our goal of $8.5 billion. While we may take some tactical actions in future periods, we consider our deleveraging efforts to be complete. With respect to our wholesale borrowings, we had a slight increase during the quarter, specifically in our repo and Federal Home Loan Bank advances of $500 million. This was simply due to large amounts of customer net buying activity right at the quarter end. This activity was temporarily funded with wholesale borrowings to allow for an orderly reduction in the balance sheet, which has already occurred in the month of July. In closing, we feel very good about the quarter and our solid results across our customer, capital, and credit metrics. As I sit here today and reflect back on our capital plan that we developed just 1 year ago, we are quite proud of what we accomplished. We have refinanced our high-cost debt, completed the planned amounts of deleveraging, completed our cost reduction programs, and achieved a 9.5% leverage ratio at the bank. These were not easy tasks, but our teams worked incredibly hard and were able to make significant progress in our capital plan in a relatively short period of time. With that, operator, we will open the call for questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to register a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You'll hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you'd like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. And if you're using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before entering your request. One moment, please, for our first question. Our first question comes from the line of Rich Repetto. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, Paul. Good evening, Matt. I guess my first question is on the market maker and the sale. And I guess, you know, you did go through that there won't be, income statement impact. But could you walk us through, Matt, like, even an estimate of what do you think of the proceeds and where does this, where would any gains or, benefit go if, you know, given that the market maker doesn't sit under the bank? Would it go, would any proceeds be, go right to the parent?
Sure, Rich. So I think I'd look at it into two pieces. So any proceeds directly associated with selling the business would be outside of the bank, so it would go to the parent. To the extent there were any proceeds or prepayments associated with an order flow agreement or payment, that would go to E-Trade Securities, which is within the bank. So it really all depends on what structure we ultimately have.
Okay. And, okay, I can ask more about that after. The one follow-up I have to change the subject would be, you know, the enterprise risk management. It seems like, you know, you up the investment there. That looks like the remaining thing. If you look at, you know, from what you said in the past conference calls about, you know, requesting the regulators to upstream capital, you know, your earnings improved. You're at 9.5% tier one leverage at the bank. The cost cutting is done. So is there a possibility that you could request upstreaming capital before year end, given you got everything else looks like in place?
So we feel good about the momentum, Rich. I think our plans are still the same, right? We laid out the capital plan a year ago. It feels very good to be executing on that plan and executing well. But I think our plans are still the same, you know, towards the end of this year. I think you're right on the specific quantifiable, measurable things in the capital plan. We've done those. But it's really an overall picture. So making sure we get all the ERM built out is incredibly important. And I can't speak for the regulators, but I suspect they look at this in a very sophisticated way. They're going to look at the entire picture. So while we feel good about the path that we're on, that path is still towards the end of this year.
Okay. Thank you, and congrats on a good quarter.
Thanks, Rich.
Our next question is from the line of Steven Chuback. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good afternoon, gentlemen. I guess my first question is regarding some of the color you provided on the FDIC assessment fees and your expectation that that will continue to come down gradually. I didn't know what the process was on the regulator side in terms of how they would go about, I guess, reviewing your CAMELS rating, how often that would occur, because I guess my understanding is that it's usually an annual process, and therefore typically you'll see potentially a meaningful step down if they decide that you've executed well on the balance sheet cleansing, implemented the enterprise risk management, and basically undergone all the initiatives that would support a reduction in those fees.
So the FDIC rate is as it sounds like, you know, is a very complex formula. So regulatory ratings are part of that formula. Your capital ratios are part of that formula. Your liquidity levels, and there's a lot of different things that go in there, and it's refreshed every quarter, right? So just, you know, we'll fire our financial reports, and it'll be refreshed each quarter. So it's going to change every quarter depending on how those things go. You know, obviously can't speak to any details on the regulatory rating side, but that's how that formula works. So I would expect it to change over time.
Okay, you have no sense as to how long it would potentially take, given some of the initiatives that you've taken to get to that $60 million target, or is it just within their control, so it's difficult to project?
Yeah, so I have no additional color. I mean, all the things that we are working on, improving our capital ratios, improving our credit quality, all those things are things that ultimately lead to a lower FDIC rate. So, you know, they're all in sync, and there's no additional color beyond that.
Okay, thanks. And then I suppose moving to another part of the expense base, just the clearing and servicing expense, we've seen, you know, a pretty, I guess, consistent reduction in the size of your loan portfolio, and didn't know how we should be thinking about the pace of, I guess, the reduction in clearing and servicing costs as the loan portfolio continues to shrink. Is it going to follow in lockstep? Is there a lag that we should be thinking about, or I guess any incremental color would be helpful?
Yeah, so it'll trend down over time with the size of the loan portfolio. The only nuance there is the servicing of delinquent loans, foreclosing on loans, those types of costs don't necessarily trend with the loan balance size. They get a little bit lumpy, so that makes it a little bit difficult to predict in the short term, right, in individual quarters. But over the long term, those costs should trend down in line with the loan portfolio.
Thanks. And then last one for me. Thank you for providing a lot of detailed color on the capital ratio. I didn't know if you could disclose your Tier 1 leverage ratio on a Basel III basis.
Yeah, we did. So it comes down at the parent around 100 basis points, a little over 100 basis points. So 6.4% at the parent down to 5.3.
At the 5.3, okay. And
yeah, and then basically the primary impact is the trust preferreds coming out.
The trust, okay. All right, that's it for me. Thank you for taking my questions, and congrats on the quarter.
Sure.
Our next question is from the line of Michael Carrier. Please go ahead.
Thanks, guys. First, just on the market making, Matt, I don't know, did you give the expenses like related to that business, you know, when you were given some of the items in terms of, you know, how the revenues would be impacted?
I did, but if you look at the income statement, the revenues for market making are the principal transactions line, which has, you know, been just over $20 million for the past few quarters. The expenses are primarily in the clearing line, as well as compensation and benefits. The margins for that business, I would put in the 10 to 20% range, right? So without giving all the detailed where the expenses go, I would view margins as 10 to 20% off of that $21 million per quarter revenue.
Okay, got it. And then probably the just two other kind of, you know, items is the first is just the reduction on the overall, you know, Tier 1 leverage ratio. Would that have any impact? I know you guys have focused on the, you know, the bank leverage ratio, but would that have any impact on the, you know, on the capital plan? And then just in terms of the items, you know, in the income statement, the fees and service charges, you might have mentioned this, but I just missed it in your prepared comments. But was there anything in there that elevated that this quarter?
Sure. So the leverage ratio at the parent. So that's, you can imagine that our capital plan is both a bank capital plan and a parent capital plan. So it's covered in there. I think the most measurable thing is really getting to a point where you have dividends going from the bank to the parent. So I think our objective is absolutely to increase the leverage ratio at the parent as well. But it's the more near term objective is focus on the bank. So that's why we tend to focus on that. Now fees and service charges. So there's a few things going on there. One, you've got payment for order flow. So to the extent you've got a quarter where commissions are going up, you would also expect fees and service charges going up. Our DARTs were up slightly this quarter, but there was four more trading days in the quarter, so the commissions went up a little bit more than the DART increase would imply. So you have the same nuance going on in fees and service charges. The other thing that goes into fees and service charges is the revenue associated with our managed products, right? So our managed investment portfolios and mutual funds and things like that, so that nice recurring income. As that product continues to build, and as all those products continue to build, that recurring fee income is going to increase. And then we get a little bit of seasonality. So Q2 is proxy season, so you've got the proxy fees in there. So everything else being equal, you've got a little bit of seasonality pushing the fees and service charges up. So a good run rate would be a slight decline in the mid to upper 30s next quarter, everything else being equal.
Got it. All right, thanks a lot.
Our next question comes from the line of Chris Harris. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Hey, guys. So question about the spread this quarter. You know, I'm just wondering if you guys can give us a little bit more detail as to how exactly that spread went up. I mean, I got it that interest rates generally rose, but I don't think really any of your competitors are going to be able to achieve a growth in the spread. Plus your rate on your securities portfolio tends to be higher than your peers. So can you help us understand exactly, you know, what dynamics were driving the spread higher?
Sure. So it's the overall interest rate environment improving, which manifests itself in a spread improvement in two places. One is prepayment slowing down, particularly on the securities portfolio. So if you look at the yield table we put out in the release, the available for sale securities and the held to maturity securities, you see those yields going up. And it's really a slowdown of prepayments on securities that are on the books at a premium, right? So when you have prepayments, that premium hurts your spread. So as those prepayments slow down, it helps improve it. And then second, which is less of an impact this quarter, but we would expect to be more of an impact over the long term if interest rates continue on the path that they're on, is the reinvestment rates have improved. You know, so if you go back, you know, 6 months ago, our reinvestment rates were more in the 100 basis point range. I would say for this quarter, they were, you know, interest rates were pretty volatile, so it was anywhere from 150 to 200 basis points of reinvestment rates in the quarter. And if you look at the forward curves, they would imply that those reinvestment rates are going to continue to go up from here. So those are really the two big buckets that impact the prepayments and reinvestment rates.
And where are you reinvesting today? I mean, what kind of securities are you – and what is the average portfolio duration, would you say?
Yeah, so there's been no change in the types of securities that we're investing in, right? So they're government guaranteed or government backed. mortgage-backed securities that we put in the either available sale, held to maturity bucket. Our general interest rate philosophy is to run a relatively matched book, you know, not completely matched, but relatively matched. So we're going to focus on the duration of our deposits is really going to drive where we're investing on the asset side. And that's anywhere from 2.5 to 3.5 years of a duration. So that's kind of where we mirror it on the asset side.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Our next question is from the line of Patrick O'Shaughnessy. Please go ahead.
Hey. So my first question is, how do you think about growth of the bank and bank assets at this point? If I recall correctly, you've kind of said that now you're done with these different measures you've taken to shrink the bank, it's probably going to grow along with client deposits. Is that the right way to think about it?
It is, Patrick. Keep in mind, over the long term, we want to run off the wholesale funding, right? So if you take the $500 million growth that's already run off in the month of July, you've got $5.5 billion of wholesale funding that over the very long term we want to run off. But absent that, really, customer deposits are absolutely going to drive the size of the balance sheet.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you. And then I guess my second question is, so just to get a little bit more color on your operating expense run rate, I think you did a little bit better this quarter than the guidance last quarter led us to, but it sounds like you're going to be doing some reinvestments over the next couple of quarters to pursue some growth opportunities, and so was it mid-260s was kind of the right run rate to think about going forward?
It is. So if you look at this quarter and you back out the goodwill impairment as well as the restructuring and other exit activity line, which are really costs to implement the cost reduction program, we're at 262. So I think that's the mid-260s is a good run rate for the remainder of the year.
All right. That's helpful. Thank you.
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, to register for a question, please press the 1-4 on your telephone keypad. Our next question is from the line of Howard Chen. Please go ahead.
Hi, Bill. Hi, Matt.
Hey, Howard.
Congrats on all the progress. Thanks for taking the questions. Matt, the 240 basis point net interest spread in 2014, you spoke to, assuming the forward curve holds true. Can you just walk through, what you're assuming for overall balance sheet size and mix, duration of the securities portfolio, any further funding actions you might take to get to that broad level?
Sure, Howard. It's really the interest rate environment. So the assumptions of the balance sheet are really driven by customer activity. You would assume that we'd have some level of growth on the deposit side, but I wouldn't say it's meaningful. I'd say that the primary driver of the spread would be a change in the interest rate environment, not a change in the balance sheet or a change of duration, anything like that.
But it assumes just the normal gravity of the loan burn down and remix into the securities portfolio, correct?
Correct. From a loan coming down around $400 million per quarter for the rest of this year, I would expect as we get into 2014 that $400 million is probably going to get a little bit smaller, but it does assume the continued run down the loan portfolio.
And what does that do to the duration of the securities book during the course of 14?
So, consistent with the earlier question. So we would focus the securities book really to be relatively matched on the liability side. So the 2.5 to 3.5 years is how we view it.
Okay, thanks. And then just a quick numbers related question. Was there any severance expense this quarter?
Yes. So if you look in the facility restructuring and other activities that rounded $10 million, about $7 million of that was severance.
Okay, great. Thanks.
You bet.
Our next question is from the line of Alex Blostein. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. Good evening. Just, I guess, staying on the net interest margin outlook and the comment you guys made about prepay amortization in the quarter, two questions there. I guess, A, can you size how much premium amortization is on a run rate basis going forward? And the modeling assumptions you guys make while calculating that, does that include sort of any one-time catch-up benefits that we might have seen this quarter, or are you doing this kind of like more on a linear basis?
So, yes, we don't have the breakout here of how much the premium is impacting it, but the impact of the rates, we're not assuming prepayment rates over time and impacting them on the yield this quarter. It's really the prepayments that occurred during the quarter. So inherent in those comments are we had less prepayments and therefore less premium write-off this quarter versus last quarter was the driver of the increase.
Okay, but I guess you're not assuming further slowdown in prepayments from here. Is that fair?
Oh, no, we absolutely are. So if you think about the improvement from slightly above 230 this year to 240 next year, the primary driver, that's going to be an improvement in the interest rate environment. And the two ways that that'll manifest itself to drive that spread up are going to be better reinvestment rates and lower prepayments. So that's the driver both in this quarter and in our expectations for 240 next year.
Got it. All right, that's helpful. Would you say it's about even, or, you know, reinvestment is more of a benefit than the slowdown in prepays?
Yeah, I don't have a breakout between the two.
Okay. And then question on the home equity book. I think in the past you guys mentioned how much of the loans that are not yet amortizing already paying down the principal even today. Is there a sense how much that was in the quarter?
Yeah, we didn't update that. I would say it hasn't changed meaningfully. You know, what we said last quarter was 40% of those had made principal payments of $500 or more in the past year. And of that, half of them, or 20%, had made principal payments of $2,500 or more. That's what we said last quarter. We didn't update it, but it hasn't moved meaningfully.
Got it. All righty. Thanks, guys.
Sure.
Our next question comes from the line of Joel Jeffrey. Please go ahead.
Good evening, guys.
Hey, Joel.
Just a quick question. It looks like, you know, for the average for the quarter, margin loans stayed relatively flat, which seems kind of consistent with what a lot of your peers were reporting, but it looks like there might have been an uptick towards the end of the quarter. You know, is that a trend that's continuing into the third quarter?
So we don't have a third quarter update on it, but you're right. So the average for the quarter was $5.7 billion. We didn't end the quarter at six. But I don't have an update for July for you.
Okay, but I mean, would you say that people are getting more willing to put on risk in terms of the equities market at this point?
Well, I think it'd be a fair assumption that with DARTs coming down in the month of July versus June, margins probably moved a little bit in the same direction, meaning come down a little bit.
Okay, great. And then just last for me, I apologize if I missed this, but what percentage of your agency securities are floating and what percentage are fixed?
We didn't break that out on the call. We usually break that out in the Qs and Ks, so we should have that in a filing, but I don't have it here today.
Great. Thanks for taking my questions.
Sure.
Our next question comes from the line of Chris Allen. Please go ahead.
Evening, guys. I just want to ask a little bit about marketing. Came down again, obviously came down this quarter. It sounds like you're engaging over the Mather going forward. I know you wanted to do smarter spending on the marketing front, but how should we think about that moving forward in longer term?
Well, I think we're still in the beginning of having Liza develop her plan both internally and with her external agencies, and I think you're going to have to stay tuned to find out what that is. I'd suggest that it's likely to tick up a bit. But I think what's most important is not only what you see us doing outside, what we're doing to do a better job of presenting good value and good opportunities to our client base. So some of the marketing you won't see going outside, you'll see it directly to existing customers, and we think that's an attractive way to drive more money to the bottom line for our shareholders.
Good. All right, thanks a lot, guys.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, to register for any questions or comments, please press 1-4 on your telephone keypad. Our next question comes from the line of David Cheverini. Please go ahead.
Hey, how you doing? So you mentioned about how you're running a matchbook, but at the same time you'll benefit from higher reinvestment rates. So are you able to highlight the sensitivity to the net interest spread, assuming, say, a 100 basis point parallel upward shift in the yield curve?
So we run a relatively matched book, right? Not an exactly matched book. So there's certainly some interest rate sensitivity there. So I don't have the precise numbers other than we absolutely do benefit in a rising rate environment. But I don't have the specific numbers versus 100 basis points. But it would definitely go up.
Okay. And then shifting to the HELOC portfolio, so do you have a sense of how much the payment would increase out in 2015 and 2016? You mentioned 26% of the book, you know, changing payments in 2015 and 41% in 2016. Do you have a dollar amount, you know, before and after that shift occurs?
Yeah, so the home equity, the HELOC books, are the average loan balances are relatively small. So for the entire portfolio, the average balance is around $75,000. So the payment increase we're talking about is a few hundred dollars a month. So it's certainly relatively small.
Now, that's a few hundred dollars on what base?
I don't have the percent increase. When you're thinking about a payment increase, it's not a few thousand, it's a few hundred. So that's how we look at it. But I don't have the percent increase for you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks.
Sure.
That's all the time we have questions for today. I'll now turn the call back over to you.
All right, thanks, everybody. I appreciate the time. We'll talk to you next quarter.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your lines. Have a good day, everyone.